Because everyone... Oh, I'm way too loud. Sorry, we'll do that again. Honk, honk. Because everyone misses the Broadway melody. In honor of nothing trying to best the new Transformers franchise, what was the last Oscar Best Picture winner you didn't get a chance to see?
I'm Katie Rich, and now that I have watched The English Patient, the next one is The Last Emperor, which beat broadcast news, and I hate it already.
Hey, it's me, David the Seven. I didn't see the movie version of Chicago, because I had seen the musical version? Eh.
I'm Matt Patches, and I'm going to go with Out of Africa, which I don't know why I haven't seen, but I listen to John Barry's score all of the time. It's fantastic, so I should probably get around to seeing the movie that goes with it.
Meryl Streep has an accent in it.
What kind of accent?
Danish? That used to be her thing, you know.
Danish? That's not a Danish accent. I don't know.
That was not an attempt at a... Hang on. I'm gonna.
It was like
up
the Swedish chef, but English.
I'm just really going to extend this... I think she's Swedish, actually. I'm going to extend this light and narrow question while I look this up. She is Danish. And she's married to a Swede. There you go.
When?
Danish.
Danish.
I was also surprised watching The English Patient that Ralph Fiennes is not English in the movie. Twist.
What is he?
Twist.
He's Hungarian. And it becomes an actual plot point later on.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room.
Fine, I can hear you now, Dimitri. Clear and plain and coming through fine. I'm coming through fine too, eh? Good. Then, well then, as you say, we're both coming through fine. Good. Well, it's good that you're fine and I'm fine. I agree with you. It's great to be fine.
It's a podcast. Hello and welcome to Fighting in the War Room. It's episode 170 and it's Tuesday, June 20th. And on this day in 1974, Chinatown was released. Very appropriate for our Oscar-related conversation, even though it lost to The Godfather Part 2.
I forget it.
David...
I forget it, Jake. What movie are we? What movie was that?
It's Chinatown.
There you go. Thank you.
That joke could be well-crafted somehow.
We could have done that better.
Exactly.
See ya. Goodbye.
We're missing David Ehrlich this week because he's off on his honeymoon in Japan. If you don't follow him on Instagram, you should. There's been some very interesting photos, including his wife, Elisa, posing with a bunch of Japanese girls in school uniforms. I don't know how that happened, but it looks like she is developing an army. We'll have to ask him about that when he gets back.
It's a Tarantino
movie. So in the meantime, apparently no one has reviewed our wedding theme episode from last week, which apparently some of you liked on Twitter, but someone did leave us a 1-star review, I hear.
Yeah, apparently yes, people did not like us going to the New Zealand reviews for one episode. Harsh.
I wish that's what this was about. So this was left on June 5th, which would be after our episode, what would be the most recent episode. So episode 168 from June 1st, Cannes 2017, and Wonder Woman with Christy Plutchko. It's titled, "That's It, I'm Out, 1 Star" by Headcanon. For some time now, I had accepted that these guys' opinions were not going to benefit me, which was okay. All podcasts don't have to be informative or practical. With their last episode, as a whole, they were able to again articulate that they are smug, intellectually insular, pretentious, shallow, tribalist, mean, hypocritical. Did I say smug? Just generally self-impressed, incurious jackasses. To be brief, dullards, but the annoying kind who are their own biggest fans. They were able to articulate this again in doubling down fashion, and for me, the last time. I did enjoy this podcast once for what it was, but I can't endure it anymore. If they really loathe something, that's a sign I'll really love it, or maybe I won't. Same if they love it. But they aren't going to be able to articulate why they hate/love it in a way that would clarify to me why I would come down on different sides. Because, of course, it's universally obvious, I suppose. And if they could explain why they loved it, it would be for reasons aside from anything to do with the movie that they were presented with. These guys are writers? ?
Damn. Whew. Tribalist. That's interesting.
I'm curious about what he hated about Wonder Woman, I guess, since that was the episode. Although, if he'd stuck around, he would have heard our kind of mixed review of Wonder Woman.
The mansplaining episode of Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Which this guy seems like.
Well, I could definitely see.
Careful.
In that Wonder Woman episode, so this is when Patches went to the Mets game and Christy Puchko came in to tell us.
So it was
because
I wasn't there.
Screenings.
Yeah, it's true.
That's probably it. I did say something like anybody who was against the Wonder Woman, women's only screenings, you could just immediately discount as an idiot and not have to listen to any more of their arguments. So.
Ooh.
I could see how that would come off as tribalist.
I mean, you didn't say anyone is against Wonder Woman. Is that anyway? I honestly, I'm kind of impressed that he stuck with us after he decided our opinions weren't going to benefit him at all. Like, I guess we were doing something right.
Yeah, this was an interesting breaking point for him. I mean, I'm assuming it's a him. I'm not sure why I do. But
that's true. I don't either.
After years, I would hope, of listening, this is the episode that broke him. That's just so sad. Well. I mean, we've been intellectually insular for a very long time now. And I clearly have not been, I have unclearly not been articulating my feelings correctly for a very long time. So it's bizarre.
I feel like I've spent over a year now explaining exactly why Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice is a bad movie. But maybe he wants me to diversify to other movies. So maybe we'll see what goes down.
Yeah, I'm too much of an SJW.
I guess he's not listening, or she's not listening.
Yeah. So anyway, fuck you, dude.
I mean, honest reviews, I'll take it. You're welcome to continue leaving your own honest reviews. We like them if they're 5 stars. And, you know, sometimes if you can just leave us 5 stars and then criticize us, we take that too. But just leave us a review. They're fun. We appreciate them. So if you follow us on Twitter over the weekend, I think a conversation that was happening on Facebook bled over into Twitter and real life in various different ways, in which Matt Patches posted his Facebook page asking people to defend the merits of the AHCA, the healthcare bill that is passed by the House and is currently working on. The Senate is working on passing their own version pretty much in secret, which is its own thing. And Patches, I think you knew when you posted this that jumping into the fray would be...
Spare them. Spare the identities.
Well, yeah, okay, so we don't want to talk about these specific relatives of yours because I don't think that's really that interesting. But, Dave, I thought it was interesting what you, I think you said on Twitter that this is a conversation you never would have allowed to happen on your Facebook wall. You see no value in the arguing with Trump supporters you know in your circle in public, even though I think you have watched this argument happen over the weekend as well. So I guess maybe, Dave, you first. Like, why in this age where we work out so many of our feelings on Facebook, and honestly, I find it hard to kind of encounter a Trump supporter on my Facebook page. So when an argument like this one breaks out and goes on for days, it's fascinating.
Although you clearly think that this has some sort of entertainment value because we're talking about it on this podcast. This is some sort of spectacle, which it clearly is, because so many people have messaged me on and off Facebook about this. I don't know, this circus of political opinion and the brouhaha. There's something people can't help but chime in. It sweeps people up and everyone has an opinion. Most of them fall on the similar side and are baffled by the people on the other side. But like, we're talking about it on an entertainment podcast for a reason. It seems to have not necessarily entertained people, but struck people in a like dramatic fashion. I just wanted to put that out there. That's why we're talking.
It turned nasty at one point, but it's mostly like it isn't as like awful as a lot of Facebook arguments are. Like it isn't getting personal because most of these people arguing with these guys they don't know each other. It's just
well, Katie, I just want to say my parents applauded your comments on the threat. You were very articulate. If anyone needs an explanation of why Obamacare may have been good, see Katie. I don't know if people can actually access my Facebook page to see this. I hope they can't. I tried to make it private, but that's why I post this sort of stuff on Facebook and not Twitter. But
I also want to give a shout out to Alex Suskin and Scott Beggs, two friends of
colleagues
the show
of ours,
who also had great comments.
But Dave would have none of it.
Everybody had great comments, but the thing is that I feel like the productive conversation could have been had by those people somewhere else. This is all about how you personally curate, you know, your Facebook wall to you. I would say to your own means. If you know Patches wants to have a like large scale conversation, you know, I would have supported that maybe more if somebody had answered the question. But instead, I think what it sort of become is in like an opinion trolling. And at least when I did do this, which I used to do politics on Facebook earlier. I don't know. I had 1 year where I had no politics until Star Wars rule. So until The Force Awakens came out, I wasn't going to engage in like who was going to be president and all that sort of thing.
Oh,
and then, you know, the 2016 election happened.
So much heartache there.
Yeah, like a year's worth of heartache, but you're building sides or whatever. But ever since then, I've been wary to wade back into politics on Facebook because the way Facebook networks and news feeds work now, if I capture a certain amount of attention, it's going to start popping up on different circles of my friend group. And, like, you know, I'm not friends with some nice people. And, you know, a lot of them are, like, good thinkers. But then other people or friends I just have from college that, like, we, like, met and I needed to go to their party next week or whatever. And I just haven't cleared them out. Like, there's a whole bunch of people that I, you know, am responsible for the content that they see from my page, I feel. And so if someone's going to come on, and even I've just deleted opposing opinions that didn't make coherent sense just to try to keep all comment threads into, like, I go on, I state something. If you have a response to it, that's great. But if you just come back to, like, yell at me, I'm just going to delete your comment, because why have that noise echoing throughout my feed?
Wow.
Sometimes, though, that does end up in, like, a day where you're waiting around and looking at notifications so you could jump in and knock down assholes until they get the point and unfriend you or something.
But here's the thing. Here's the thing.
Yeah.
The reason I put this out there was not to, like, create a pit of bile to kind of, like, dunk my friends' heads into. First off, it's all opt-in. And when people opt in, I don't think anyone expected people I know to jump on a thread and be just cruel and disparaging, which I was surprised about, and I tried to shut that down. I asked kindly to not use hateful language. I was very shocked. I was very shocked what transpired here. But, I mean, this is also reality, right? I think, to use a phrase that one of our critics of this podcast, before he walked, used, you know, maybe people can be intellectually insular and smug when it comes to political conversation, especially in this day and age, when I personally feel that a lot of our political discussion discourse has turned into entertainment and is fitting to talk about on this podcast, because even when we're in these dire moments, especially with, like, everyone tuning in to watch the Comey hearing or everyone listening to Pod Saves America this week to see how they'll basically regurgitate the news and make us laugh and make us cry because it's horrific, and then, you know, kick us
for
out the door
record,
and
like
send
Pod Save
us
America. I'm not going to just stand by idly for dissing of other podcasts.
I'm more being critical as someone and as someone who continues to listen, just because I want to know what people are listening to, because the show has many, many fans. But it is entertainment, and I liken it to, like, watching 24-hour news for the liberal millennial sect. I just think it's not actually stimulating or challenging the conversation or helping people realize what is out there and why we need to change the world if you fall on one side, or why you need to see what these kind of hardcore Alex Jonesian Republican types are like. That's why I bring these things up, and why I thought it needed to be, you know, I've been interested in seeing people be rattled by this conversation, because it's so shocking and so disturbing and so gross and so baseless. There's no defense when these people yell at you on Facebook, and when this brouhaha started up. You know, my big question, defend this new healthcare plan that they're putting out, has yet to be addressed. It's just talking points. It's still this kind of weird infotainment rhetoric. But I see people that I know, good friends, getting caught in this kind of maelstrom of infotainment on the liberal side of things. And that scares me too. I mean, we, like I said, just tuning in every single day to see what the next, like, Trump scandal is going to be, reading Twitter and reading in-depth news and every granular detail.
Oh,
it just
God.
Feels like entertain. It feels like TV recap culture to me more than it does.
Wait,
processing the news and then getting out there and doing something about it.
What if, like, TV you expectation disagree? Spoilers has led us to all of the conspiracy theories that are taking over, like, about how, like, Louise Mensch saying that, like, Russia's been hacking all of American life for 20 years.
It has.
Yeah.
I mean, we've been talking about this since the Boston bombing, right? Reddit thinking that they can solve the Boston bombing and using screen caps and, like, point arrows there. It's the same thing that they were looking at when they were watching Lost. It's crazy. And now it's politics.
You like Lost, defend it.
Sure. I mean, in the same way that, I don't know, blocked on the Fighting in the War Room comment section is somebody that kept insisting that we were being racist in talking about Iron Fist casting. And, you know, it's not like the first time that accusation's made, you go back and you listen to the episode and you try to figure out if you said anything wrong. But then if they keep coming back with that, I'm not going to continue allowing them to comment on a website that I control because it's just nonsense and the reality is I control it. So I'm talking like from a game theory point of view, the slide in Changing Hearts and Minds happens when you start respecting opinions that are blatantly wrong and crazy. It's ever call for everybody.
Wait, what do you mean by the slide? As in, like, respecting opinions can only take you so far?
Well, like, the idea that Fox News says they're going to be fair and balanced, but what that means is you now get to introduce counter ideas to facts because there should be two sides to everything is...
Or, like, how climate change deniers were given, like, an equal platform to people who believed in it for years until everyone figured out that was really hurting people.
Or theory of evolution people. It's like there's a certain line that I think you should draw culturally. And again, this is, like, up to people and institutions about what you're willing to represent as a valid counter-argument. To me, a lot of the healthcare arguments boil down to very fundamental and understandable differences of beliefs of who you think... deserves to have access to healthcare and what that means. And then it gets fluffed up by what Patches is talking about, like this entertainment culture. And I think the two can exist in the same place. I do like that our entertainment culture is drifting more towards political entertainment. I'm less excited that our politics are drifting more political entertainment because I think more people paying attention is going to ultimately cause emotional reactions like Patches is having, which is why aren't people doing something about this? And hopefully that motivates people to do things about this. I just want to make sure that I have very little control over media politics in my life. And what I do control, I like to have very strict control over. I like to, you know, like own my shit and have complete control over what opinions are represented or at least a voice to say whether or not I'm comfortable with that because I feel like anybody can have an outlet and people should curate their outlet and their opinions.
To kind of put a cap on this conversation, you know, we talked on this podcast before about... especially after the election, like the rise of all the comedians talking about politics and the rise of like watching actual news. I think leading up to the election, Dave, you and David and I had a conversation about how like watching Trump tape was like we watched it in a cinematic value that that hidden camera or hidden microphone tape, the one about the grab the pussy.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember grab a pussy? Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
That, like, that had cinematic value.
And Bill Cosby had a mistrial. Oh,
Jesus
so
Christ.
Things are going great for women who accuse powerful men of sexual assault.
Wait, but so to put a cap on it, and the question to both of you is, how do we – I'm starting to feel like we need to keep entertainment out of these conversations but still have these conversations. It's important. But, like, clearly Facebook is not the place to do that because even if you're trying to entertain people with different types of points of view so that some people can – like, I want people to see these two mongrels have a conversation and be rude to people. And
these two mongrels
yeah, these two mongrels are related to. You know, people I actually, in real life, can have a nice conversation with. But on their online present, I'm basically related to, like, two Twitter eggs. Jesus. And but, like, I want to be able to have these conversations with people. And Facebook is a platform to do it. But I see the entertainment of it all converging on this. You know, we can't keep entertainment out of our politics at this moment. Or can we? Is there a safe space? How do you do it? How do you have these conversations? How do you wake up to what's going on in the world without indulging in the spectacle of it, which is where I think we are right now. All the Russia stuff especially for me makes me kind of nauseated because of this healthcare issue that's out there. And I just think we're indulging so heavily in the, like, what happened on last night's episode of the Trump administration. So how do you keep it out of there? And what do you
honestly, do? Honestly, I think if you can turn healthcare entertainment, that's better. Like getting people to pay attention to more things. Like we watched the Comey hearing because James Comey has been turned into a character who we care about. And the healthcare bill is happening in secret. I think because Mitch McConnell realizes that we're going to pay attention if like there are figures who we can latch onto with this. Like we care about Paul, like as, you know, as liberals watching politics, we want Paul Ryan to get humiliated. And we want to see what happens when like, Ted Cruz says something dumb, and if the healthcare bill is happening in secret and doesn't have that element to it, which I think is why we are afraid that it's just going to happen and no one's
going to need to weaponize real life by turning it into fiction-ish type Entertainment.
I mean, I assume that there are some Democrats out there who are recognizing this. You know, like Cory Booker turns himself into a Twitter celebrity to try to get more attention. Like Chris Murphy gives some impassioned speeches that go viral. Like you used, I mean, that's how Obama started. Like he goes and gives a speech at the 2004 DNC that everyone pays attention to, and then he became president. It's a really powerful thing. And I think it's more prevalent in our politics now, but I don't think it's new.
I guess to turn it a little bit back more to entertainment, like I know friends who follow sports with a sort of feverish thing that I can't imagine they're paying attention to all these things happening simultaneously, seemingly constantly, like David and hockey and things. And so I imagine if a part of that entertainment, but also critical thinking brain can get turned to politics, that we'd actually benefit from that as long as we're not like betting on it. But, like, you know, people who are really good fans of a sport and are able to, you know, analyze the way that it's played and the statistics that are generated every day for that sport and training camp, it's almost exactly like politics. And I don't think that a little bit of entertainment is a bad thing to be injected in the political arena, as long as, you know, don't take the red pill media-wise and just assume that everything is the same as, you know, watching a political debate or watching James Comey testify. That's different than, you know, MSNBC talking head show or, you know, meet the press. So as long as you could balance it out and everybody gets better at their fake news barometer, I don't see a harm in it. But, you know,
and I think if everyone cared about their local representatives as much as they did about their local sports team, like it would be a better, the world would at least be more representative, like maybe not a better place, but more people would vote and be engaged in what's happening to them on a local level, which is like where you can actually impact shit.
Yeah. I think we're going to see more people vote either way. I don't know how that's going to turn out for anybody, but that's probably for a separate review on a differently themed podcast.
Also, if you're upset about the healthcare bill, call your senators. I don't care where you live. Call them. I've been calling mine. It's fun. They're very nice. I mean, they don't pick up, but their staffers are very nice. Also, Dave, are you calling your senator right now? You're in Colorado.
Yeah, he started just having voicemail on all his lines, so I've been leaving lots of messages.
I've just been leaving Facebook messages on my representative's walls. Does that not count?
I feel like that's not going to have the same impact. I don't know why.
Are there, like, 5 responses to your comments that are just all poop emojis?
With American
snowflake, 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 snowflake.
Poop emoji. Snowflake poop emoji played really... by TJ Miller. So, Patches.
Yeah.
You've seen Book of Henry.
I have.
Based on what you've seen, what are the odds that Colin Trevorrow remains the director of Star Wars Episode 9?
Whoa, that's a big question. There's a few factors here. One, the Book of Henry is the new movie from Colin Trevorrow, who directed Jurassic World and,
Safety
Not Guaranteed. Two films I didn't really care for, I gotta be honest. But I wanted to give the Book of Henry a real shot. This was a passion project, I guess, that this guy, Greg Hurwitz, who writes like airplane or airport thriller novels, came up with and wrote, and Colin Trevorrow has been trying to make for a little while. And I mean, definitely got to make the movie he wanted to make. It's a fucking weird movie. So if you haven't heard about this, it's about an 11-year-old boy named Henry and his young brother, Peter, played by Jacob Tremblay. And Henry is actually played by Jaden Lieberher, who was in St. Vincent, that movie with Bill Murray.
And Midnight Special, too, right?
Oh, is that kid? Glowing Eyes kid? Yeah, you're probably right.
I think so.
It was hard to tell because his eyes were not glowing in the Book of Henry. Right. He was glowing. He was just glowing.
At least in the poster, he's wearing like an aviator mask?
He wears them in one scene just so they can have like some weird Spielbergian Amblin throwback. I don't know why that is Goonies-esque or something, but that just strikes a chord.
When the poster for this movie came out, I sent it to you in G-Chat and thought I was so angry, because anytime anyone just makes a Drew Struzan-inspired poster, I just want to scream, get your own
It's time
idea.
To stop indulging.
Which it seems like is a valid complaint about the movie
It's
itself.
Time to stop indulging the boys who grew up with Spielberg. This is a whole other segment that we should unpack. Look, I'm one of the biggest Spielberg fans. I love all of his movies so much, but his self-mythologizing combined with the adoration for him has warped an entire generation and has warped Hollywood forever. It's so bad for movies, the love of Spielberg. It's bizarre. Anyway, the Book of Henry is actually...
Why don't they ever try to make, like, Lincoln-inspired
Yeah,
movies?
For real!
Like, color purple-inspired
Get with the time. Spielberg grew up. These boys can't. Colin Trevorrow yeah. is truly someone who seems to have learned everything he knows about emotion through movies, and he can only process, like, what it would be like to feel real pain or feel real sorrow or feel real love as... seen in movies, as seen on TV. And The Book of Henry is the worst schmaltz imaginable. A Hallmark movie combined with an assassination plot of all things. So yeah, The Book of Henry, as people have heard, I imagine, is about a genius boy, very precocious. He calls himself precocious in the movie, by the way. And he's very aware. Oh. And his mother is played by Naomi Watts. And she is a kind of failure. This movie has weird... If you thought Jurassic World had, like, weird female politics going on, The Book of Henry... boils down to, like, behind every woman is a great man. So in the beginning of the movie,
and that great man is
Naomi Watts' great man is her child, her 11-year-old kid, because she's a do nothing, like, lazy. She works at a diner. She does fine. Who knows what happened? I think she got divorced, but now she spends most of her time playing video games when she gets home. And apparently, the most challenging thing, Naomi Watts is an incredible actress, but the most challenging thing you can do is ask, Oscar-nominated actress or whatever to play video games. They've never done it, and it looks awful. Naomi Watts cannot pretend to play Xbox Gears of War shit. But she does, and her 11-year-old, like, invests in stocks and builds inventions around the house because he's precarious. So he's precocious. He could do anything. He could build giant tinkering machines and, what do you call those elaborate... Rube Goldberg's. Everything's a Rube Goldberg in this kid's life. And then he... I don't think this is... I'm going to go ahead and just spoil the entire movie for people. So if you are not... If you're looking to see The Book of Henry, if you're one of the 8 people still intending to see this movie in theaters, I apologize. The kid dies, right? So now she doesn't know what to do. She's going to keep...
Wait.
She's going to spiral out of control. What?
Haven't you also skipped over the neighbor?
Well, I was going to do that as a twist.
Before the dying?
So she, oh, okay, got she, it. She finds his notebook. Jacob Tremblay is like, Mommy, Henry left this and wanted you to read it. And it details how he thinks the neighbor next door, played by Dean Norris of Breaking Bad, is molesting his stepdaughter, who Henry had a very close friendship with. And the mom, Naomi Watts, is completely convinced this is true. She goes through his notebook.
She asks no questions. She just...
Now, because he's a precocious boy, not only did he leave a notebook, he left tapes that she can listen to that tell her where to go around town, down to the moment where she's like, no, Mom, turn right. No, your other right. Because, you know, she doesn't know where she's going, so she accidentally went left when he said right, but she needed to go to... He knows everything from beyond the grave, thankfully, because she's a moron and he's a genius boy. So he walks her through this whole plot. Now, he wants her to assassinate Dean Norris. He wants her to buy a rifle illegally. He's mapped it all out. He's already gone and done all the spy work necessary to get a rifle with cash and kill their neighbor. And needless to say, the movie goes very close to this moment. Now, should I flat out spoil what happens at the end of The Book of Henry?
I believe
okay, I'm just going to go for it, everybody, please. So remember, this is your chance to go see the movie. But she comes very close to actually doing it. And the revelation of this movie is that maybe a grown woman shouldn't necessarily listen to an 11-year-old boy all of the time. Maybe she could be a mom. So she decides not to kill her neighbor with a rifle. But it turns out he did molest his daughter. And when she confronts him about it, he kills himself. The movie ends with his suicide. And to be clear, his daughter is played by Maddie Ziegler, who is the girl who dances in all of Sia's videos. So, of course, she's doing a big dance scene that is bringing certain people to tears, including the school principal, who Henry tried to convince to intervene in this, like, possible abuse situation. But she refused because he's an 11-year-old boy. Why would you listen to him? And then she's so moved by her dance at the end that she goes and calls the police, who go to Dean Norris's house to get him. But by then, he had already blown his brains out. The end. Well, actually, it's not the end, because then Naomi Watts is like, what am I going to do with my life? And then Lee Pace is also in the movie as a doctor, and he comes in and gives her a hug and says everything's going to be okay because he's a neurosurgeon. He's got money and he got brains, and luckily dumb woman will be freed by this. She can keep playing video games. Also, Sarah Silverman
mentioning his character didn't come into play until the end of the movie.
Yeah, well, he's a little bit in the movie, but not much. And also, Sarah Silverman is the movie as Naomi Watts' best friend, who is an alcoholic. Both of them are alcoholics. They drink wine all the time, during the day, at night, all the time. And at some point, Sarah Silverman kisses Henry, the genius boy, on the lips because she knows he's going to die, and he's never had a kiss before, really. I thought she was going to, like, allow him to motorboat into her breasts, which are like basically hanging out. It's very bizarre. It's a very bizarre movie.
Jesus Christ.
You could see why people are comparing it to like The Room. It's not that fun, I have to say. It's not like a get drunk and see this movie at midnight kind of movie, but it's strange. It's bold. So I guess, yeah.
Real quick, Kathy Kennedy does not take shit. What do you think they're thinking?
Well, that's Dave's question, right? I don't know how you can backtrack. At this point, someone floated a theory to me that they could... When is the movie scheduled for, Dave? Is it scheduled for the summer?
It's a May release.
Okay, so someone floated...
May 2019?
Yeah. Yes. Someone floated a theory to me that they could potentially bump the movie back to the December, which would keep it in track with the other two movies, and actually replace him in time to like have someone come in. And let's be... I mean, if they replace someone, it's got to be a woman. It really should be. Like, give Ray a female director for like 2 seconds.
Or like make it Rian Johnson or something.
I don't think Rian Johnson will do a second one. That feels weird to me. But seeing like after...
It feels weird to me too, but it seems like a good face saving.
I mean, what does Patty Jenkins have to do to get a Star Wars movie?
We wanted him to continue.
She's sitting right there waiting for the...
Sorry, I talked to you.
I was just saying, what does Patty Jenkins have to do to get a Star Wars movie at this point?
Yeah, that was my tweet.
A Star Wars movie?
If she doesn't want one, I don't know.
If she doesn't... She cannot contract out for Wonder Woman 2, even if it's going to be a huge payday because of the numbers it's doing.
Or Reed Moreno after Handmaid's Tale. Like, everyone's talking about the look and feel of that show. I don't know what you have to do.
Yes.
But Colin Trevorrow, I mean, he can function in a blockbuster setting. He made Jurassic World. These guys trust him. So this one-off may just be a one-off where he got to do his own thing and didn't have an actual producer pulling the strings, which is how these big movies get made. They're not director movies. They're... Well, but then again, Star Wars is a little different. They are more director-driven, perhaps. Than so this may have been a big failure. But I guess the question is why it's a failure, and is it on Trevorrow, and do people worry about his stock in accomplishing Star Wars? It depends if there's an 11-year-old boy in Star Wars who tells Rey to kill her neighbor. Because if there is...
That's what they've replaced Princess Leia with now.
So that's the Book of Henry.
I mean, Steven Spielberg did get to make 1941 between Jaws and Raiders, and he turned out...
Yeah, but he had to come back from that, right? The Spielberg story is interesting because I was discussing with someone recently whether Raiders of the Lost Ark is art or not. Yeah, so this is the conversations I have off the podcast. And and the interesting thing is Spielberg needed a hit after 1941, right? And then I need to look this up to be 100% accurate, but was Raiders of the Lost Ark the next movie he did after 1941? It was. And
it was.
It was so calculated, right? It's Lucas, you know, who can make the most commercial movies possible. He has got a brain for what connects with the masses. And you've got Spielberg, who can just kick the ass of any action scene. And it's going to be a complete action scene of a movie. It's like playing into a nostalgic heart. It is the ultimate blockbuster after the ultimate flop of, to quote a friends of our podcast, the blank check syndrome of where you get to make whatever you want. And 1941 was a colossal failure on so many levels that you make the ultimate popcorn movie. So the question is, and we could discuss this later, is Raiders of the Lost Ark art or not? If it's going to be made completely for commercial reasons, it's highly entertaining for sure. But maybe Colin Trevorrow needs to bounce back and just be a commercial fool. Maybe he has that DNA where he can make... I mean, Jurassic World... I'm trying to remember if there's a good part of Jurassic World.
I liked Jurassic World, I just think he's a bad choice for... I like Jurassic World because it was a stupid dinosaur movie.
What scene did you like in it?
I'm a longtime fan of stupid dinosaurs. What scenes did I like?
Yeah. Like, what great action scene does it have in it?
What great scene does it have in it?
Yeah.
I think that the modeling the... like final battle scene off of two dogs fighting is pretty great. I think the once the raptors get released and the raptors interact with, okay, all the scenes that the dinosaurs do things are actually really good scenes. They just don't go to the full extent that they need to with, like, the human characters, and then that takes up so much more room that you could have put cool dinosaur things. But I don't begrudge Jurassic World for being a stupid dinosaur movie.
So what you're saying is Colin Trevorrow needs to go to the Transformers universe, the shared universe.
For sure. I think he'd be really good at that sort of workflow where you're, you know, filming nothing and then later, a year later, putting something in there.
Well,
I think that's great.
That brings
I think it's weird that he's saying he wants to shoot parts of Star Wars in actual space. That seems like the opposite of what you would want to do.
I forgot about that. Well, your comment about filming nothing and then going back later and filling with things brings me to The Book of Henry, which is out in theaters now if you want to see it. And you probably don't, but if it's going to be on an airplane, and you will too, so. What to say and what to do, my basketball steer red, white, and blue, and yet I slam cool. Don't get me wrong, I'm on my. So this week was the E3 conference. Am I right about that, or was that 2 weeks ago? Time has no meaning.
I think it was last week as this episode is coming
out. I think so too. So E3 happened. Obviously, none of us are really on top of E3. Every year, I want to learn more about video games because, obviously, based on last episode, I played Hearthstone and fell away from it. Right now, I'm playing Fallout 4 on an Xbox One I just got. I'm a little behind the times, if you can't tell. But E3 has always, since my GamePro reading days, has been a kind of, I guess that's what, this is what Comic-Con is like for some people who don't go. They watch and they envy and they try and stay on top of news and live vicariously. And I certainly do that from all the journalists that we know who go and report on things that are happening. And the highlights don't seem all that worthy of recapping, or they don't seem worthy at all. It didn't seem like big announcements came, but from what I could tell, people were excited about a new Mario game. Mario's back again. Mm-hmm. Actually, more than one Mario game is coming to the
Wii. He possesses people with your hat in one of them.
Yes, he has a hat that talks. You can play two. The second player can play as his hat in the new game. Cool, I guess. I love Mario games. I poke fun because I love. And then they remade Skyrim, a game that I actually played for like virtual reality. You can play it in VR through PlayStation VR. Maybe I'm making up facts now. But there's new Far Cry games, there's new this game, Titanfall, there's new all sorts of, you know, the brands we
Star
love.
Star Wars Battlefront 2.
Yeah, it's all sequels, right? And, you know, we whereas we bemoan sequels more often than not, oh God, the Transformers Shared Universe, another one of these, or like, we can't even, it's hard for some of us to get super excited for like, the new Thor movie or the new Avengers movie. Here we go. Another one of these. Great. Let's do it. And it feels really repetitive. The gaming community gets so excited for the IPs they know and love. They want more of these. Or, one of the big games that came out was this game Black and White 2. They've been tracking the sequel for a very long time. It's finally coming out. And that's great. I mean, get excited for a long-awaited sequel. This is what we do with the movie world too. But what dawned on me was that the gaming community has been trained to love sequels and IPs in a way that has hardened and made the movie community more cynical. And we have not grown accustomed to this. We haven't grown attached. There's a lot of feuding. And this might exist in the gaming world too, and people who listen to the show should chime in. You know, there's an indie gaming community, people making their own games, trying to create art, and it's awesome, and not IP-driven. That's fine. But it doesn't seem like they war as much, maybe because I'm not tuned in. But I think the big thing for me was, did gaming actually change the way movies function for a younger audience who grew up on video games, grew up on wanting Mario 1, Mario 2, Mario 3, Mario 4, Mario Endless, and through the end of time, every new Mario movie, every new Zelda movie, or every Zelda game, like, just give me the next installment of this franchise I love, make it just exactly the same, but a little different, so it's, you know, I'm still getting the Zelda, but I'm not. And that, for me, has more in common with blockbusters today then a lot of what we talk about when we talk about the past of movies, movie history, the Spielberg era of kicking off sequels and blockbusters, that, you know, Top Gun or Jaws or you know, whatever you think of as the modern blockbuster, that's not where we are today. Something else happened in culture to get us, and some people, as I think Dave will chime in here very soon, might call it the TV-ification of movies or the comic book-ification of movies. But for me, I see a connection between video games and movies that I want both of you to address, because there's something about sequels today that are more like video games and how we replicate IP down to the molecular level so that it's just slightly different. That seems very Super Mario 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 to me. What do you think?
I mean, I don't know. You definitely have something that video games and movies in terms of the way that they use intellectual property is similar, but because the forms are so different, it's hard for me to make the connection that you're making, because the what motivates a new video game to come along isn't we need a new Mario game, what happened to Mario, like did he and the princess really live happily ever after. What motivates a new Mario game is a new technology they want to turn into a game or a new gaming interface. And so it wasn't until, actually movies sequelizing started happening that you had people going back and trying to retroactively apply continuity to these games. You had series like Final Fantasy that was just putting another number on it and doing a story and not having any, like, through-line continuity for years before movies were doing that sort of thing. So, but I think because it's story-based, and movies are still like completely storytelling-based experience, whereas gamings are going to remain something that you have to like get in there and actually physically participate with. I think what that's going to develop to is things like Alien Covenant, where the addition of more story or rewatching Game of Thrones, which I'm also doing, the addition of more story makes you go back and look at the story that came before. Is like, if it's in the same world, but then you can then look at it in a different way.
Katie,
does that make any sense?
Yeah, Katie, I think you could speak to this too. That like these movies, these sequelized movies, these mega franchises, don't actually have continuity. Rarely do they have stories like television where we're really invested in the characters. I don't think people are invested in Guardians of the Galaxy. I think they like the shades of those characters the way they like video game characters, and they just want to play them again.
They're putting a lot of effort into cinematic universes and making these things tie together in whatever way. But I think the way that this makes sense to me is that with a video game, like the reason for whatever video games I play is that like I'm more likely to gravitate toward a Mario game is because it's something I played as a kid and I like kind of mastered the language of it. And I think that seems like an incentive to me to kind of keep returning to the same video game franchises, that like you know how Zelda works, you know how Final Fantasy works. And with movies, like it's not as interactive a thing. Like you don't have to have any skill set to see the next Marvel movie, but it kind of offers the same level of comfort. Like you kind of know what you're getting in for, and like you feel like you have the tools to watch it, even though the whole idea of movies for someone like me is that you don't know what you're necessarily going to get into. So I feel like it's playing off that comfort level that, you know, and to be fair, movie franchises have existed forever, not on the scale that they are on, but since the beginning of movies, we've had serials. They're just all kind of more professional.
But that's where I take this is what Dave was slapping me with on Twitter. Quote retweeting like a troll the other day.
I regret nothing.
A true Gamergate move. That they're not like serials, right? They're not like cheap little one-off adventures. They are tenuously connected. There's the world that people live in, and this is what the games offer too. Like if you take a Zelda game, you're always going to see Link, and you're always going to see Zelda, and maybe Ganon will be there in some form. There's boxes to check, and the Final Fantasy games are similar to this too. You got to see these three things; they're going to pop up somewhere. So they're not like serials, which are total one-off adventures. More like comic books, to be quite honest, or more.
But the serials aren't one-off. That's different. Completely. They have to be like partially linked in some way.
They're more like comic strips where they're like broken up chunks of a single movie. They're not sequels with continuity. And they're not like episodes of television either.
But because it's again, it's like a story-based thing, you know what to expect from that because you're getting the same similar sort of genre or whatnot. It's like why, you know, you could have two Smash Super Smash Brothers games, and they're both going to do really well, but you have two Avengers movies, and one has a story that sucks, and the other one is good, and that means that you're going to like one Avengers movie better than the other one. It's not just all the characters are together. Otherwise, you know, Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice would have worked.
Yeah, I guess so. But yeah.
It worked
no,
for some
people. No, but
wait.
You're describing why my theory stands. Because some is it Mario or Mario? I get grilled by this one all the time.
I say Mario.
It depends on where you grew up in
America.
I
know. I hate my life. Mario. some Mario games are bad and some are good. This is exactly what you're describing. But we kind of want to. We'll always see them. We'll always kind of tolerate them. We'll look for the good in them because we want them to be good. At least that's how I felt about Batman v Superman. I'm like aching to like this movie on some levels because I love these characters, or I have in some past iteration, and that's what keeps people defending them. Right? This is why every day 5 angry Twitter eggs yell at you about Batman v Superman because they're holding on to this thing that they absolutely love. The gamer community has infiltrated the movie community. And that's what fandom is right now. It's like holding on to characters because you've seen them so many times in so many other ways that they've been successfully done that this one whiff cannot derail you. They're going to like this game no matter what.
Oh, I think if you're talking about how like fandom has changed with video games and movies, I mean, I think that's a really different.
But I think they are linked. Right, I think that the movies serve these fans who need the movies to be almost exactly the same.
And also getting back to our politics conversation, I think that whole like rooting for your team thing and they can do no wrong comes into
politics. God, it's all the same.
Just to go back for a second.
This episode has been one big essay on
humans.
Teams.
Humans are frustrating all the time in all these different contexts.
Yeah.
So sorry, guy who left a 1-star review saying you were out earlier. You didn't even begin to see the Ouroboros that we were going to wrap ourselves into of insular talking. I don't know. I kind of agree more with what Katie said, where it's like, if I'm going to go back and if I'm going to play Super Mario Brothers 3, I'm going to play Super Mario Brothers 3 because it has a raccoon hat that I know how it works and I know where the secrets are in the levels. I'm not going to buy Luigi's Mansion because I liked Super Mario Brothers 3 because it's a GameCube game with a completely different game mechanic. It's not like a platformer. So it's like, it does and it doesn't connect. I think it treats IP very similarly. I just don't know if I could make the one-to-one connection you're making because it's just films just inherently so much more about storytelling. I don't think you could.
I wish movie studios would take a cue from Bethesda Studios. So as I mentioned, I'm playing Fallout 4 right now, and they did Skyrim, which they apparently just renovated for or remade for VR, whatever. But they, Skyrim and Fallout 4 are almost the exact same game. My wife Michelle and I have played Skyrim, and it's basically a big game where you wander around a fantasy land and complete quests, and it's endless, and you're just like collecting items and like building shit out of junk you find, and it's like The Sims plus killing people. It's great. And Fallout 4. Is almost the exact same thing, except now it's in a new setting. It's the future. There's been a nuclear war, and you're going out there and you're collecting junk and building stuff and killing people. Same thing, but totally different worlds, right? Totally different setups, but the mechanics are familiar. And I wish that more blockbusters, we could have quote-unquote original movies that functioned like old movies, taking the blueprints and just like, let's remake this movie but with a female lead, or let's remake this movie and set it in Japan, or like, let's remake this movie and do it almost exactly the same so people know the cues and feel good, and we can make a movie that costs $200 million, but we're going to make it, it's going to be a totally different property technically. But so often we have the Mario syndrome of movies where it's the same characters having to do the same things over and over again, and I love Alien Covenant. But it's like, let these properties die. Stop making these endless IPs and mining them forever. Just make new movies. But they've been convinced that what gamers and viewers love is that repetition of character. When really, I think they love the repetition of form. But it's a harder sell? I don't know. Crazy.
I mean, like, what if we made a movie about a really smart kid that knew his neighbor was being molested, and we just made it look like a Steven Spielberg movie? But, like, people don't care about plots as long as it looks like a Steven Spielberg movie, so I think we'd really make a lot of money out of this.
If only that movie could be real and I could watch it every day, thinking about Genius Child.
Coming to HBO Go.
Seriously.
DJ Khaled! Yeah. Yeah. All I do is win, 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 no matter what. Got money on my mind.
That does it for this week's Fighting in the War Room. We'll be back next week, still without David, who is off on his grand honeymoon. But in the meantime, everyone who's left, tell the people who you are.
I'm Matt Patches. I'm the executive entertainment editor of Thrillist.com. And I'm on Twitter, at Mr. Patches. We have a website, fightinginthewarroom.com. where you can listen to the episodes, you can share them with friends, which your friends would love this, and I feel like give the gift of, I don't know, what, is there a holiday coming up? Father's Day. Wait, we just missed that.
Give the gift of insular smuggery.
Yeah, the one thing you can't do on Fighting the World, or fightinginthewarroom.com is have long political conversations, because we'll probably close that shit up in public, but you can go to the site.
Just make good opinions.
Yeah. Just be
or
smart,
make,
man.
Make, we, anyway. Make bad opinions make once. Opinions. Oh, I'm, yeah, that's right. There's no David. I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. You can find the rest of us on Facebook. Fighting in the War Room has a Facebook page. You could like us there. And I suppose there you could engage in whatever conversation you like. I'm not deleting any comments off of there. You can also find more of me on Star Wars Spoilers, where we are re-thronesing and watching Game of Thrones leading up to the new season. This week we're doing season 5, which is by far the worst season of Game of Thrones for a lot of reasons that we will tell you this week.
And I'm Katie Rich. You can find me at vanityfair.com, where sometime this week I'll be publishing an article where I talk to Zach Woods and a lot of the other people who are on the show about the character of Jared, who I'm a very big fan of. So if you like Silicon Valley or Jared especially, read that eventually this week. I'm also on Twitter at Katie Rich, KateyRich. And we're all on Twitter at FITWR, where you can confess your secret shame with this week's lightning round question.
In honor of nothing trying to beat the new Transformers franchise, what was the last Best Picture winner you didn't get a chance to see?
Thanks for listening, and we'll be back talking to you next week. Holding hands in Hollywood life. We all strapping all black. It's like Bud Light. You riding the what? Cause we riding the night. Now you riding with me cause you wasn't riding. All I do is win, win, win.